You're listening to Radio Aryan. Red Pill Radio for the awakened white masses. At RadioAryan.com.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for coming all this way. We've just had people arrive from Devon, albeit a bit late because of traffic problems today on a Saturday. We've got people here from Manchester, Essex, Bromley, and Bristol. And I was quite surprised to be told that the last meeting for the National Front in Bristol was in the 70s, in the days when Martin Webster could get into a size 16. But seriously, I mean, I didn't realise it was that long. It was that long since the National Front had been here. The BNP had been here. We've been in this room. But all that time, 40 years, so this is the launch of the National Front in Bristol. And I dedicate this launch of the National Front back in Bristol.
The relaunch, yeah.
The relaunch to all those people who tried to bring us down in the last few months. The courts with Jez Turner, Alison, Hard Cash Productions. And when it came to Hard Cash Productions, looking at their undercover reporters, I don't know if anybody remembers the Carry On films. I love these.
They're on all the time.
Yeah, I love Christmas watching them. There was one old one called Carry On Loving, and it was about a dating agency run by Hattie Jakes, which is what Joey Owens calls me, Hattie Jakes. Oh, the Reds are up the road. Hattie Jakes and Sid James. They ran this dating agency. Hattie Jakes thinks he's sneaking off to have an affair. So she hires a private detective who was Charles Hawtrey, the funny little one with the rimmed glasses. And he was Detective Snooper. And there was Mr. Snooper. And there was these really chaotic scenes of hiding in shop doors. And that's what Hard Cash Productions reminded me of. Mr. Snooper. We were pretty much onto it straight away. But I totally agree with the chairman here that, you know, the next time we get the slightest feeling, we've got to communicate, even if it's with other rival factions. We can't let these people, they're making money out of us. Somebody told me that ITV paid Hard Cash Productions £250,000 for that pile of crap. And you think of the counselling that could have paid for those girls up in Rotherham, yeah, or Newcastle or Oxford or Bristol, and they wasted that money on that. So we were on to them quite early. There was a few things I won't bore you with that wasn't right. I mean, the fact they didn't swear gave it away for a start. And when I got the letter telling me that I was racist, I had links for the terrorist organisation, it was worded in a way to look as though you are on the directorate of the National Front and you are in communication with National Action. So they were trying to tie the, you know. And they got me on the film. They did get me on the film saying I've had a letter from Jack Renshaw. And as I said on Sven's show yesterday, let's get something absolutely straight. You cannot be a member of something that no longer exists. They've been disbanded, they've gone their separate ways, they don't exist anymore. So he's not a member, he's an ex or former member. As for communicating with him, well, call me picky, but I happen to believe you're innocent until a jury of your peers has convicted you. We've not heard a word of evidence against Jack yet in a court of law. He's been accused. You know, there's a bit of gossip about whether he's guilty or not. But until I hear a judge convict him in a democratic court of law, by a jury of his peers, he's innocent. You know? And they're trying to tie us to this terrible terrorist organisation. And I also have to laugh at the fact that they spent all this money following us around. And all they had to do was wait 3 weeks and they would have got a lot of us up at the Cenotaph. We were all there, Jez, Alison, everyone, in full plain view. So if they were agency undercover operators, I wouldn't book them. And so that's that. And I'd also like to thank the production for increasing my friend requests on Facebook, extra followers on Twitter, invitations to give speeches and talk on radio shows. Thank you so much, Hardcash Productions, for raising my profile. I'm earning much more money now. And it is rather comforting having the police go up and down my road every night, making sure I'm okay because you try to portray me as an extremist. And the neighbours love it. They think it's great, the police coming up the road every night. So, what was the point of that exercise? Well, we know the point. We got Jez and Alison up in court. They're trying to link us to National Action. And this is a concerted effort to bring nationalism down. But it's not because of anything we've done. They are hoisted by their own petards. We are the reaction. They're the cause. Immigration, Muslims wandering around Europe with no paperwork, raping German women. And we dare object. We dare have an opinion. So I am so delighted to be here and to relaunch the National Front in Bristol. And I'm going to be really, really honest here. When my husband died only 12 years ago, thanks for snooping on his Facebook, Hardcash Productions, because however much you think that the company I am in, the nasty far right, are the lowest of the low, I would rather sit in a room of these people than spend an hour with any of your people who snoop on a dying man. So I just get that one out, but I was, as Janet knows, because, sorry, cut her name now, Mrs. Slocum.
Oh, I don't mind getting cut a surname.
When my husband did finally die, I tried to hurry him up, but I was left exhausted. I had serious health issues, so I was exhausted because I nursed him at home right for the last 2 weeks. No help from the NHS, nothing. And I was exhausted, and I had some serious health issues, and my GP kept saying, if you don't stop, you know, I was here, there, everywhere, all over the country, and I was carrying on with the nationalism, because you lot kept me sane. You know, I had to watch my husband die, and you guys kept me sane, so thanks for that. But my GP said, if you don't stop, you know, you don't rest up, you could have a problem. And I kept thinking, I'll do the grieving bit later. And I did make myself ill, and I reached a point where I realised my health was so bad, especially I actually wrote out a circular that I was going to send out all over the country saying, I'm really sorry, I'm going to take 6 months off. Because, well, thanks to Hardcash Productions, I've deleted that circular. And I will keep going till I drop all the time. There's people like you now and there. So that's me. We are delighted on our first relaunch meeting to have our chairman of the National Front, who also has been through a mill with a serious car crash. I've seen the photographs of Kev on the stretcher. Not a pretty sight. A good vet would have been able to revive him, but that was awful, but he's back. And we are just so excited now to be back in the West Country. And it's just onwards and upwards. It's onwards and upwards. And I'm going to quote Richard Edmonds, what he said outside the Westminster, when he said, if you join us, you are in good company. And we had a fantastic day, didn't we?
Yeah.
Marching through Westminster, flags aloft. And I want to thank Kev for letting me lead the parade with him, because that was a proud moment. And whatever this bad press, this rubbish they put out, we've seen people coming out of pubs applauding you. That's a feeling like no other. So I'm going to hand over to Kev. Kev Ryan, the original chairman of the National Front. Thank you very much for coming all this way, Kev.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Ladies and gentlemen, fellow nationalists, fellow whites. Just before I go into my speech, just a little bit about Hard Cash Productions. I'd like to thank them for the free publicity that they gave us. Publicity on television is priceless. I don't think they've shown the National Front in any bad light at all, because they couldn't do. What I will say is, while all the other parties on there, and to be honest, the parties that were on there I haven't got any time for, especially the little creep bookmate, at the end they all apologised and said they're not racist. They apologised. Bookby says he left the BNP because of anti-Semitism. Well, I wonder why that is. But what I will say is, I never ever want to hear a National Front organiser on television or on radio apologise for being racist. We were the only party on there that never apologised. We're a racial nationalist party. We love our race, we love our people, and we're very proud to be part of nature's finest. So we will never apologise for being racist. This is the first time I've spoke at a National Front meeting here in Bristol. I spoke at a forum meeting in Swindon not so long ago, but there hasn't been a National Front meeting, as Julie said. It's probably the early 80s, I believe, when the Bristol branch of the National Front was very, very large. As you can see, the numbers here aren't fantastic today, but it is a start, and the very fact that the National Front is here and has established a presence here in Bristol, in the southwest, that's enough to hit a nerve with the treacherous powers that be. Many years ago, I used to see on marches, and even now if you watch on YouTube, the old National Front marches of the 70s, you used to see the big Bristol National Front standard. It was very, very large and it looked very small, as did a lot of other branches. And I often wonder to myself, where have those standards gone? I know Richard Edmonds managed to find a big, big old cloth banner, which I think had a black mugger on it, if I'm right. And Richard was given that not so long ago. But the actual marching standards, used to have a huge one in Portsmouth, Leicester, Bristol and other areas. And I just think to myself, they've either been destroyed or they're stuck up in people's lofts. And you also have to ask yourself, where were them thousands of people? Julie just mentioned Remembrance Sunday. On one Remembrance Sunday in the 70s, the National Front had 8,000 people on that march. Can you imagine being on a nationalist march with 8,000 people? You'd think that'd be it, power tomorrow. But of course, the infiltrators, the people who like to destroy nationalism, they work their way in there, and unfortunately things went downhill, which is a shame. But you know, Bristol, Antifa, scared to death about the National Front getting a foothold in Bristol. You've only got to type in on Google, Bristol National Front, and there's loads of messages from Antifa. Last year, Antifa were saying the Nazi NF are not welcome in Bristol. Well, Antifa, here we are, and we are in Bristol today. Another one I found quite funny when I was doing some research yesterday, when I typed in Bristol National Front, there's an Antifa band. 7 years ago, when there's a chap with a big Mohican, there were a punk band called The Pigs, and they recorded a song, you had to listen to it, it's quite funny, and it's titled National Front. We're very good of them to sing about us. Reminds me of Morrissey, another one, he recorded a track called National Front Disco. But I think the difference with Morrissey is, I do actually think politically, he is quite on our wavelength, is Morrissey. holding a meeting here today is quite significant for our party, as in this city, immigration is quite high, higher than most cities. The population of Bristol estimated at around 454,000. That was on the 2011 census. The population of Bristol has become increasingly diverse over the years. Some local communities have changed significantly. There are now at least 45 religions in this city. At least 187 countries of origin in this city. 91 main languages spoken by people living in this city.
Good God.
91 languages, yeah. And the large increase in this population has really, since 2002, can be attributed to a number of factors, including migration, a significant increase in births, a decrease in the number of deaths. Since 2006, the total population of Bristol is estimated to have increased, this is since 2006, by 45,800, and this is according to the 2011 census. So that was from 2006, an increase of about 11%. A few interesting facts on the ethnic makeup of this city. The proportion of this, again, it's probably higher now because this is 2011. The proportion of the population who are not white British has increased from 12,000 to 22% of the total population.
In Bristol?
In Bristol.
22%?
In Bristol, yeah.
Good, I didn't know.
Here's the more shocking news, again, according to the census. There are 12,085 Africans. On top of that, there's another 6,727 Afro-Caribbeans. There's another 6,922 from the Congo and Nigeria. 6,863 Pakistanis.
Good God, what?
6,547 Indians, 2,014 Bangladeshis,
good God.
And 1,272 Arabs.
Good God, what?
There's 3,886 Chinese. So you can imagine what a melting pot Bristol is. And those figures are alarming, really. They are alarming. But they're them figures. But the most alarming figure to me out of all them is that there are 15,438 people in this city of mixed race. Yeah.
How many?
Of mixed race. 15,438
people. God, what?
And that just sums up the calibre of many people in this city. A people with no racial pride. Well, shame on those people that they've stood so low to breed with the alien races.
Yeah.
One day, those people will get their comeuppance, because when the British people eventually give the National Front the mandate to repatriate the hordes of non-whites, those that have committed the ultimate sin of race mixing will be sent packing, along with the others, back to Africa, Pakistan, and wherever else in Bongo Bongo Land they came from. But you know, those figures are just one city in the southwest region. I haven't gone into the figures of the other places like Swindon, Gloucester, Exeter, and other towns and cities. I don't think they're anywhere near as bad as Bristol. But it's hard to believe as well, those figures are read out. 6,863 Pakistanis. That, I would say, has probably trebled since 2011.
Yes.
I won't be at all surprised. And you know, out of all them figures, I bet you could work out that, you know, Nigerians, Congolese, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis, what? Arabs, there's probably over 50% of them are Muslims. Now, I don't know how many mosques there are in this city, but I would say that there's a fair few. Do you
mean? Whole of South Gloucester and Bristol, there are 62 mosques.
62 mosques?
Horrific.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Some of them belong in someone's front room.
Yeah, I can imagine. But you know, even though there's a huge non-white population, in Rochdale, half of the council is Pakistani and non-white, and Oldham's very, very similar, and other places. But the ethnics as yet have not got a massive foothold on the city council. There's 71 city councillors in Bristol, and only seven of them, only seven, which is still 10, are non-white. They're all Muslim, and everyone is Labour. And then there's a Mr. Abrahams, and obviously...
Good God, what? Well, we're always good to celebrate diversity.
Yeah, yeah, well, total of the council makeup in Bristol is 38 Labour councillors, but interestingly enough, there's 11 Green councillors. So you could say Bristol, 38 Labour, 11 Green, it really has got a truly communist council. So that's for the Tories and the Lib Dems that make up the rest of the council. The Tories are usually money orientated, they have no ideology, but both the Tories and the Liberals also follow the same Marxist path of destruction that the Greens and Labour follow. None of them give a damn about the indigenous people. None of them give a damn about our culture or the British way of life. None of them give a damn that the country, that Bristol, is heading towards third world status. And if asked every one of them, would praise the fact, they would praise the fact that there are 15,000 mixed race children. All can give each other a big pat on the back. That this city is following the Coon and O'Calvary plan as laid down by their masters, and it certainly is. Ladies and gentlemen, a fifth of the population of this city is now non-white. That is a hell of a lot of brown faces. For many, it's gone past the point of no return. We all speak to those, it's too late, or there's nothing that can be done. They're everywhere. You talk to these people all the time. I've been speaking to them for 25 years. They were defeated, these people were defeated when they saw just one brown face. They've got no backbone whatsoever. And this weakness has now been bred into the psyche of many British people in just the last 50 years. Ever since the Windrush landed, our enemy has bombarded our people with its multiracial agenda. Our eternal enemy, and we all know who we're talking about, our eternal enemy soon recognised the two inherent weaknesses of our people. The biggest weakness, the two inherent weaknesses are our gullibility and apathy. Mm. And the enemy has aimed its target at that for all time. At our people's gullibility. 95% of the British people believe everything they're told by the politicians and the controlled media. They never question the two words, television programme. They do not realise that they are being programmed. And the two words, television programme, has just that meaning, to programme the masses. They have a tendency to swallow everything that they are told. Last Friday night, an example, I went into town, into the town where I live, only a small town, Bacup in Lancashire. And everywhere you went, there were people dressed up in these silly yellow onesies, the faces painted to look like Pudsey Bear. Oh, you had to, there's only five pubs in the town centre, and you had to pay an entrance fee to get in all of them last Friday night.
Why was that?
And they were coming in with collection. Why was that? Yellow onesies, Pudsey Bear. It was children in need.
Good God, what?
And they were coming around with the buckets, the raffles, or for children in need, or, as I would say, Africans in need. Because none of it comes to this country, I doubt. And all of this, and you can probably remember, those who are old enough, is a result of the scruffy millionaire Bob Geldof about 30 years ago. And you know, here is this man, Geldof, a multi-millionaire. I wonder how many of his millions the half-Irish, half-Jew Sir Bob has actually given to children in need. Quite a strange thing, actually. I don't know whether any of you can remember. After that very first Children in Need, a lot of that money went to fund the Ethiopian Jews. I think you'll have to be careful what you put on. Ethiopian Jews, they airlifted them to Israel because of the starvation in Ethiopia. There's a massive population of Ethiopian Jews. And Bob Geldof used that money to fly them to Israel. And that's a fact, you can look it up. But what have they got now in Ethiopia? They've got a race problem. Mm. And the Ethiopian Jews don't get on with the Semitic Jews. God, so, you know.
That's bad news, Kev.
Pardon?
That's bad news, isn't it?
It's terrible news, yeah. So the two weaknesses, gullibility and apathy, they most certainly are the two weaknesses that our enemy has recognised and used against us in their battle, really, to defeat us. This morning I sat in the hotel room thinking to myself, deep down a massive percentage of the population agree with us. That's obvious, they agree with us, with our stance on immigration. But they're just too scared. They're too scared to talk about it. And usually if we get into a conversation in a pub or the workplace and the discussion turns to politics, the first thing us nationalists usually talk about is immigration. Well, that straight away puts a lot of people who are frightened onto the back foot. They don't like to talk about it. They'll nod their head, but they're really too frightened to join in. To talk about immigration, you see, it might make them feel slightly racist, and they don't want that label, do they? Maybe, really, because the National Front has a huge manifesto. Maybe we need to start bringing in our other policies when we're getting into conversations, because the National Front, our manifesto, has the policies to put right the rot that has been heaped upon us by successive governments. Tory, Labour, Liberal, they've all chipped away following their plan to destroy us. And not one of these parties has ever put the interests of the British people first. When you think back to Britain 25 years ago, you think of the coal mines, the steelworks, the docks, car manufacturing, furniture manufacturing. You think of these industries and they are all but gone. When I think back to when I left school, I was working in a ball bearing factory called RHP Bearings in Newark-on-Trent, where I'm originally from. And a lot of my friends worked down the pit, some went in the forces, and then there were the two large factories in Newark, RHP Bearings and Worthington Simpsons. At one time, RHP employed over 5,000 people. I think it employs about 200 now. Welcome, Mr. Lozell. Glad good of you to join us. Yeah. But, so when I think back to the miners' strike of 1984, thousands of miners fighting for the jobs. Thatcher not giving a damn about closing the pits and destroying communities. And at the time, the miners had the Labour Party fighting for the corner, or so they believed. If so, they believed the Labour Party backed them. Well, the truth is, the Labour Party actually closed more pits than the Tories.
Really?
The Labour Party closed a lot more pits than the Tories. Harold Wilson closed twice as many pits as Margaret Thatcher. Pit closures were actually a major Labour Party policy. So whilst all the Westminster parties have destroyed our industries and filled our country with cheap imports, the only party that has stood firm and kept their policy of British jobs and the revitalisation of British industry is this party here today, the National Front. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, last night I stayed in the Premier Inn in Bristol, thanks to Julie. And the bar closed at 11. Well, I didn't get there till 9:30, so I thought, well, I'm going to have a wander around Bristol. Anyway, a bit later on, I got chatting to three students from the university. They were pleasant enough, not the kind I would class as reds or anything like that. But one young lad was an Italian. He'd only been here for 3 months. Anyway, the conversation, as it does, it didn't turn to immigration, it actually turned to crime. And during the conversation about crime, and we was also talking about what the security had been talking about, acid attacks and, you know, other things like that. But during the conversation, I turned to the Italian lad and I said, I says, there was hardly any crime in Italy under Mussolini. And his face lit up. It was a picture. I didn't get the reaction I expected. His face lit up. And he says, oh, he says, my granddad's told me lots of stories. He says, my granddad was a big supporter of Mussolini. Anyway, the other two fell silent. You should have seen the looks on the face. They could not believe that we were talking about Mussolini in a good light. They were gobsmacked. But, you know, they couldn't believe that we was actually glorifying fascism. They'd never heard anything like it. You could tell with the look on the face. Well, too right, we were glorifying fascism in the days of Mussolini, because there was no crime in Italy.
Absolutely.
Anyway, then, I think they were struggling what to say, their answers. Anyway, one of them piped up, but under Mussolini, there was no freedom of expression. There was no freedom of expression in fascism. Well, my answer to them was, there's even less freedom of expression with communism. Anyway, so this morning while I sat talking, thinking about freedom of expression and the double standards, the most vile creatures are allowed to express themselves in our city centres on their so-called pride parades. Yeah. You have men walking around expressing themselves with the backsides hanging out of leather pants. So, and then you have men kissing each other in the street. That's freedom of expression. But when nationalists gather in city centres protesting about immigration and they get attacked by the Reds, it's the nationalists that get thrown into jail. Yeah. And only yesterday, one of our good members, Wayne Bell, received a 2.5-year sentence for things what happened in Liverpool not so long ago. Freedom of expression? Not if you're a proud white nationalist.
Why?
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll end this talk today by saying I've today read out the racial makeup of Bristol, and of course it is bleak, just like in many other towns and cities. And I spoke about gullibility and apathy. While most people suffer from apathy, while most are gullible, the people in this room today certainly are not.
Yeah.
The BNP is finished. Britain First are only an anti-Islamic money-making machine. UKIP are on the back foot. The National Front is on the up. Our membership has gone well up this year. The National Front are on the up. We're still sending out the powerful message, stop immigration, start repatriation. Together, and with people like you in this room, together we can go forward, and together we can win. Thank you.
Speaking of expression, I was born in Brighton. I was raised in the posh part in the South Downs, but it always had what they used to call a homosexual community. And in the 60s, it seemed to be with the advent of television, we had the influx of what I call loveys, the board trainers, you know, the thespians. But they went off into Kent Town, but they were very discreet. They dressed like us. They behave themselves. They'd be going sticking their tongue down something's throat on the promenade. You wouldn't have known about it. They were very, very respectful. And because it was a seaside town, a cheap seaside town where mum and dad from the East End of London could take the kids down to the beach, you know, quite cheaply, cheap bed and breakfast, those two sections of society lived side by side. They were very respectful. Then we got into the 80s and we went through the Freddie Mercury stage of the gay front, where Brighton was full of young men in very tight denim jeans, the white t-shirt and the black leather cap. But again, they were very respectful. They started to get their own clubs and they were respectful. I mean, they did not go wandering into the Hungry Years pub where all the local Hells Angels were. And mums and dads and kids on the seafront didn't go wandering into the Zach Club where people danced round in circles. But it was all very respectful. And if you were out on the promenade with your children, they might have been gay, but at least when your kids walked past them, they knew if it was a man or a woman. You know, they didn't have to say, "Mummy, what's that?" You know, "Oh, I don't know, dear." But now, August this year, 300,000 LGBT descended on Brighton. Christ. I can't even tell you the photographs that came out of Brighton. 300,000 for gay pride, etc. And it was, I'm sorry, you can call me a prude, you can call me homophobic, what you like. I found it bloody disgusting.
Too right.
Men wandering around dressed up as fairies, like Kev said, with their asses hanging out. But in those old days when there were gay communities there, they were respectful, they were discreet, they respected the mums and dads out with the kids. 300,000 of them didn't give a monkey's what they got up to. And that's a seaside holiday town. You imagine having 300,000 of them. We have shops in Brighton now where you can buy just about anything from a gimp mask to various, I don't know, I've never been in them. I'm just told. And I have a member of my family, she did a stint in A&E as a staff nurse. And she said, about 10 years ago, they would have to remove something from someone's rectum. Maybe one, no, I'm going to be honest here, maybe once every 6 months you get the odd one in. She said, it's regular, Saturday nights. What are we going to remove from someone's bottom tonight?
I'll tell you the same story later.
One night she said, lemons. Who shoves lemons up their bottom? But the best one she told me, this is absolutely true, she couldn't believe it. He had to go down to surgery. He had to be cut open. It was a cathode ray tube.
Good God.
Now, cathode ray tubes were in the early 50s and 60s, 70s television sets, made of glass.
Oh, my God.
Now, when you think that you can go into a shop in Brighton, you can buy anything. You can buy a ball gown for a man, 7 foot man. You can buy size 20 shoes. You can buy any sexual appliance you like. But no, I know what, love. While we're in the mood, I've got just the thing. I'm just going to go out in the shed and take this television apart because I want this cathode ray tube to insert in you. Good. And we're wasting our medical teams removing this stuff. I mean, she said it's like bingo night. What's going to be the star prize tonight? Lemons, cathode ray tubes, or... Sorry, I find that deviant. I find that wasting our NHS removing inanimate objects from people's bottoms. I don't care if they want to go off and be deviant. Go and do it in your own house and not on our promenade. But 300,000 of them. But what has changed from the 50s, the 60s? You know, even the ones like the George Michael lookalikes, at least they were respectful. They didn't ram it down your throat. No pumps, I'm telling you. But 300,000 of them in your face, not giving a toss what you want your children to see. And some of those people, you'd walk past them, you wouldn't know what it was. If I don't know what it is, how does a 10-year-old child know what it is? But there's the issue, isn't it? They don't want 10-year-old children knowing what it is. That's the agenda. But they've hijacked this whole town. And I, who I'm traditionalist, I like the seaside bucket and spade bit for the kids. I'm a homophobe. I have hate in my heart for these people. No, I just don't want to see your arse hanging out of a ballet tutu. You know, how the hell are you meant to raise children to be respectful when they've got their tongue down something? You know, right in front of your kids. And this is what's taking over. And this happened because the Greens became the first Member of Parliament, the Greens, for Brighton. And the first thing she did was she made Brighton a bacon-free Monday. Not for the Muslims. We don't get any Muslims in Brighton because the gays frighten them off. So it does have its benefits. She made bacon-free Mondays. And it was hilarious. It was for vegetarians. The bin men went on strike. And she said, well, don't worry. It's just flash in the pan, they'll be back at work next week. 4 months later, when there's rats up the strip, this is what they're trying to bring into our lives. Bacon-free Mondays, things dressed in pink tutus with their arses hanging out.
Good God.
I get, you know, sorry, if you want to call me a prude or homophobe, then I am. Nobody should have to put up with that. And I felt hijacked. That's my birth city, that's where I grew up. And there's my poor sister, midnight in A&E, with a latex glove on. You know, they don't pay them enough, do they? So let's go and get some food.
Can I just say, off the record, I was a staff nurse, and I did work in A&E, and I did get exactly that come in when I was triaging.
Yeah, it's true.
When you're a triage nurse, they come in, and if it was like this, that's one, and if they, that's three, and they wait all night. I had a chap come in, and I'm sat, come in. And he come in like that,
I said, take a seat, please. I said, what's the problem? He's apparently, long story short, he was decorating and a candlestick holder got stuck up his backside. Well, I've got to write this down. So I'm beginning to laugh. I said, really? And I've got to say, no, I didn't stay in A&E that long. I didn't have the personality for it. But he said that, oh yeah, I was decorating a candlestick. He said, you know what it's like? I said, no, to be honest. Anyway,
he ended up in surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
But the point is, how much did that cost?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It cost a lot of money to do that. He had surgeons, the nursing staff running around, he had aftercare.
All because yes. He's some kind of pervert.
Yeah.
And another one in Brighton, this is the emergence of... The militant feminist. In the 60s and the 70s, the arches under the promenade, a bit like in EastEnders, but in more upmarket, but you had these arches and there was workshops and creative studios and things like that. We have the London to Brighton vintage race once every year. And it was, a race wasn't really a race, it was more like breakdown, 3 miles out of London and spend the day waiting for the RAC. But it was, and now in those arches is a, I don't know what you call it, a shop, a studio. You can go in and have a plaster cast taken of your labia. Janet, would you like to go to Brighton next week for a...
No way.
People are paying £25 to dip their doodah in plaster, take the cast and then paint it. God. I'd rather go down the pub. 25... I say no more, but this is how this sexuality has crept into Brighton. And where's the day when the kids could sit on the beach smelling the French effluent coming up, you know, the Buckingham's Bay bit? It's gone. But I've got to tell you the best bit. Well, I've got to tell you the best bit. Brighton has a very historic history. I think it was King George VI. He was the mental one, wasn't he?
No, George III.
George III. Yeah. So the Prince Regent took over Brighton. And he built, in his father's honour, the king, he built him a palace, and he was inspired by various architecture we've seen around the world. And this year, when Labour had their conference in Brighton, all over the internet and social media was a picture of a mosque.
Yeah, it wasn't a mosque, was it?
Jack Sen! Look at this, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
There's a mosque. Labour's put a mosque as the backdrop of the conference. No, it's not. It's the Royal Pavilion, you know. And but it just shows you how uneducated some of these people are. They just saw it and went, they put a mosque up. But it was the Brighton Royal Pavilion. And that is one of the most historic buildings in the South Coast. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody cares anymore. As long as there's a bloke in a pink tutu with his arse hanging out. That's what's important, isn't it, these days? So next we have our young man everyone's heard of before. And he's so popular, the Reds were shouting out his name in Grantham. Kevin Lazell.
Wonderful.
Our young delegate from the National Front, everyone knows. Come on, Kevin, come up and speak.
Well, hello everyone, I'm from Romford, East London. We'll talk about some campaigns we've been doing over there. I don't know if anyone's seen it on the website, but we've got council elections next year. So what we've been doing is we've been going out every month with a giant Union Jack gazebo. I don't know if anyone's seen it. It's about 7 foot tall Union Jack gazebo. And we have National Front flags, which we have on flagpoles strapped around the edge. So they're the 5 foot version of these ones. Very dramatic. You can't miss it. If you go into the town centre, it's all you can see on the town centre is the fact that when the wind blows, there's four big NF flags, blazing with NF, going right in your face. We're out there every month, looking to do another one next month. If anyone's, I don't know if anyone's actually from East London here, it's quite far, I appreciate. But if anyone is, certainly come meet me at the end. I'll give you my number. We can, you know, you can come out to it. Get a good turnout. We get a great response from it. I'm hoping, well, next year, obviously, I'm hoping for a great vote. But, you know, it is what it is, what we get. But it's all the same. The one thing I will point out is if people are doing activisms, if you can get photos of it, because it's not so much what you're doing on the street, but truthfully what you're seen to be doing as well. Because it goes down a storm online. You do an activism, let's say you give out, let's say even just 200 leaflets, say it's a slow day, you only give out 200 leaflets. You take a photo of it, you put it on the Facebook page, within an hour, you know, 3,000 people have seen it. So it's not so much about what you're also doing, it's sometimes, let's say, what you're seen to be doing, which is what people enjoy. Which brings me on to the second part of it. I do have, if anyone is holding activism, I have a whole bunch of branded NF flags. We've got a whole bunch of different designs with us. If anyone's attending any rallies, any demonstrations, I've got a few. I've got this one, a whole few of various designs if anyone's interested at the end for if you're holding your own activisms. Nothing goes better for an NF activism when people actually see the NF flag. It's iconic. It, people see it, it sets our party aside. One of the only parties with our own political flag. It's great. So if anyone wants to pick up a flag, you know, talk to me at the end. If anyone's in or around London wants to get involved with some campaigns we're doing, we're out all the time, then great, you shout me out and I'll you know, get something sorted at the end. And it's all talk, thankfully, but yeah. Thank you.
So just a quick update and then we can all, because you've come such a long way. As Kevin said, we've got council elections next year, and it's not so much about thinking we're going to win them. It's about getting the National Front noticed in towns, and really we can try and stand as many candidates as we can. And I think what I've met over the years is a lot of younger people coming up in nationalism that shy away from standing in council elections because it's the whole process, it's the legalities, the cost, where they go for advertising, etc. So Richard Edmonds and I came up with an idea. We haven't actually run it past Kev yet, but if Richard says it's good, it's good. So what we're going to do, we're going to start a workshop and we are going to hold a meeting for a day in every county. London, one down in the southwest, Yorkshire, Lancashire, wherever we got people. We're going to have a workshop to educate about how to stand in elections. I'm not going to be the mentor. We're going to get the people that are the most experienced. And we've spoken to a few, you know, a few very old hands at electioneering. Because when you think of the experience that all our old nationalists have, people like Max Mussel and Richard, you know, they've lived and breathed it for decades, and it's all that information to waste. I'm not bothered if people who want to stand as independents, if they're nationalists, they can come along. And we get in the people to come in and give them advice on the paperwork, especially with the parliamentary elections. We can advise them on things like how to work from a marked register, how to, you know, what to expect at hustings, how to get the demographics for your constituency and work that to your advantage, and all those things that hopefully it will give even, you know, people like Kevin a better, because the more knowledge you got, you know, that might be the difference. Between actually taking a council seat and not. But when you think about it, in nationalism, you look at other political parties and they do have professional workshops. Why aren't we doing it? We've got this wealth of information that we can share with younger people, because if we don't educate these younger people coming into nationalism, we will die. And I don't want to go off this earth without the comfort and knowing there's another generation out there to look after our grandchildren. So I think we should start to take a little bit more professional approach with electioneering. paper candidates are great because at least your name is out there, the party's name is out there, and people are reminded. But I had an experience in Burnley. That was a funny place because on one hand, you had the Muslims, on the other side you had the white British. It was like, you know, Muslims to the left, Christians to the right, stuck in the middle with the Jews. That's what Burnley was like. And they hated each other. The Muslims hated the Polish. So the Polish wanted to end immigration. They didn't want any more Muslims, so they were voting BNP. And the Muslims didn't want any more Eastern Europeans coming in and taking off their corner shops. So, and it was bizarre. But what we did up there, we, at the same time as these borough council elections, there was the police commissioner elections. And we couldn't stand a police candidate in those elections in the BNP. So we actually did a deal with UKIP, and we said to them, you stand down in the borough election, and we will promote you in the police commissioners. And it really worked. And the shame of it was, we didn't win, but we beat Labour, and the Tories beat us by just 36 votes. And the thing about that was that the percentages shot up. The minute your vote percentage goes up, that's when the tabloids start taking an interest again, and then they start reporting on you, and it's free advertising, it's free recruitment. So that's what we thought was, does anybody think that is a good idea, just have a workshop one day in each county? Anybody who wants to stand for election, come along, get some, you know, get some advice, and not only that, just have some encouragement. Instead of them thinking they're out there struggling on their own, is just encourage the younger ones. Because we've got some people that would make fantastic, you know, local election candidates. It's just giving them the push and the confidence to do it. So that's what I want to do. So Richard and I are going to try and get that going soon. So we're going to have regular meetings down here for the National Front. I would say every 3 months, because the time in between, we can start getting leaflets out and the stickers. What I'll do is what I did in the BNP, is get some business cards. These work well if you, like with my own mobile phone number, except I have a separate mobile phone. And when you're out talking to people in the street, they're the ones who really want to talk to you, but their neighbours down at the bus stop and they don't want to be seen. They're the ones you can slip a card. That's my phone number, you can ring me in confidence. And they work, they really do work. So I'm going to get some of those done. Regular 3 month meetings. And hopefully we will recruit. The other thing is, if anyone's got any more stickers for me, because I've been putting them up everywhere. Buses, bus stops, doctors, surgeries,
parking meters are good. Parking meters.
Yeah. And the other one I like doing, I get a perverse pleasure out of this, all the junk mail that comes in the post, Pizza Hut and all the rest of it, empty it all out of the bin, and then you put an NF leaflet in it, return to sender. So it doesn't cost you anything in the post. So we haven't really achieved much today, other than this has been a great exercise for the security in our rushes to get together, because you know, it's fantastic to know that we feel safe having these meetings now. That means a lot, and it's a bit of a social. We got together and thrown a few more ideas around, and I just honestly want to thank every one of you for coming all this way. It's a huge way to come.
Thank you for your hard work, Julie.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.